Good morning. You're listening to the Monday Morning After Show. It's 7:40, and it just turned 7:41, and we're now ready for Zeke's Alternates Art Review.
Howdy. How you doing?
Good morning, Zeke. How are you?
Not bad at all. Not bad at all. Today, it's not an alternate art review. It's an alternate art interview.
Ooh, interview.
Yeah, because we got somebody in studio. We're lucky. Like, pigs in mud. Jennifer Hamilton is here. She's got a show that's coming up at the, Mylan Guitar Shop.
Yes.
Which is happening this Friday, right? And how long is that going to be up for? We can get that all that sort of nonsense out of the way at the beginning and then remember to do it at the end.
Well, it's one night only at the guitar shop, mm-hmm. but people are welcome to come for a studio visit, and my studio's in the same building.
Okay. And so, yes, there. Then let's get this stuff out of the way. It's called Colo... Why is it that always my mouth and my lips never want to do what I want them to do this early in the morning?
It's hard to do Latin first thing on Monday morning.
Can you say it, please?
Colo Coloro.
Thank you very much. Which is happening on Friday from 9 at night. It's at the Mylan Guitar Shop, which is 5555 De Gasp Bay. And yeah, cool. Now to discuss the art. We got that out of the way. Yeah, it's the sort of thing where you're sort of doing all sorts of, as you were just saying, accessible sort of stuff. Relatively... easy to get, easy to understand, easy to do art. How did you come up with that idea as opposed to doing the really like technical stuff? Because you've got like lots of schooling as well, and so I'm certain you know how to do the stuff with the oil paints and mix them and everything like that.
Right. Well, this is sort of drawing on my design background, which I did after I finished university and got my fine arts degree. So when I was in fashion school and when I was designing jewelry, I learned how to make really intricate marks and practice drawing for, 8 hours a day, 5 days a week. So, and I love doing that. So these pieces are really intricate drawings that were done with a 0.1 micron pen. And then they were scanned, printed on vellum at a larger scale, and then colored in and by hand and float framed in plexiglass, and then they're backlit so that you can they look like jewels or wreaths or something like that. So there's these flowers, and then there's also the guitars. So I'm collaborating with the Mylan Guitar Shop, and hopefully in the future I'll be able to actually draw on the guitars that they make. That's the plan, but for now we're I'm just doing patterns on paper.
Okay. And then when you say that you blow them up, the initial size is about how large?
Oh, originally they're done on paper that's 24 by 36 inches.
So it's still not small paper.
No, and
then,
not small.
And then when you blow them up, how large do they get blown up to?
The flowers are 4 feet by 4 feet.
Aye, aye.
And the guitars are 4 feet by 5 feet.
Aye, aye, that's even bigger.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. When you're doing them, are you drawing so as to sort of focus on this will be blown up, or is it that you're drawing for drawing's sake and then when you blow it up it's, oh, this is what happens?
Yeah, the second option.
Because there it's, I'm thinking in terms of now, I'm again wishing that it wasn't Monday morning and I had my nice handy little file folder here, because there was a show that I saw at Mai about 4 years ago where this is one guy who had drawn, it was a humongous thing. It must have been about 20 feet long by about 8 feet high, and he was using colored pencils.
Okay.
And he colored every single square inch of it with a drawing. And then there was this other one, which was at Articule, but back when they were down on Berry.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a show that, who was in it? And again, I'm going to space on them, but again, this one then was 8 feet high by about 3 feet wide with somebody who'd used ballpoint pen to draw completely and everything. And it just, that sort of sense of drawing is like phenomenal, just how much you have to concentrate on it and sort of each little bit and stuff like that.
Well, I mean, I worked also at a company that makes mosaics, and so when I'm doing these drawings where I'm filling in all the space, it's kind of like mosaicing where you're just kind of like mark making over and over again. So
yes.
It's this repetitive meditative action.
That's the infamous or the famous and the wonderful mosaica.
Yeah.
Yes. No, there it's infamous. I'm supposed to be, Shelley Miller is supposed to be coming in at some point. Oh,
yeah. I met her there, and I also met Amy there, who I collaborate with on the magazine.
Yes. No, there it's the, when you say the magazine, we should point out, or not point out, because you can't see it over the radio. But you have Placemag here, which is the thing that I'm sort of, sad to hear, because you've told me that you're not certain where and what's happening with it afterwards, but it's, we have four issues now, right? 1, 2, 3, and then the big poster thing. Yes. Over there. And with that, yeah, because it's one of the things that I find sort of as a neat thing is people who still do zine culture.
Yeah.
Which I would consider this, yeah, I assume you can say it, but given the digital age, it's like, that's like so old school.
Well, it's easy to make a zine now with the digital technologies. Like, these magazines were laid out using InDesign, and so I think it's neat to combine the aesthetics of both. We scan a lot of the material, and so it's a combination of sampled images, original artists' works, and content that we produce.
Where did you come up with the idea for it?
Well, Amy Vickberg, who's my collaborator on the project, came up with the name, and it was actually the name for a tiling company that she wanted to start.
She wanted to call a tiling company Placemag?
No, Place Tiling. And then that transferred into this magazine project. When I thought of the idea of doing a women's magazine that didn't necessarily look like one, then we applied the name to this project.
Okay. And when did you start that?
That was at the end of 2007. We started throwing parties, and our motto at that time was party first, print later.
Okay.
So we had a couple of parties celebrating a magazine that didn't exist yet, and then we started actually printing magazines in winter of 2008, which was this first issue, the winter issue.
That's the first issue, and then this is the second, third over there, which is the humongous poster.
A huge poster.
What's this with big stuff?
I don't know.
It's not a bad thing. It's just big.
I'm afflicted with wanting to make giant things, I guess.
Cool. And then this is the fourth one, which is the slickest looking one. This one looks like it almost could be... I don't know, interview magazine or something.
Oh, well, thank you.
And yeah, then it's, as I mentioned, it's sort of in limbo now.
Well, the plan is to make a book, sort of documenting the whole project, the parties, the contributions by the artists in the Mile End, which is where Amy and I both live, and then the physical objects of the magazines also. And then, I mean, at the parties, there were also art shows kind of displayed at the same time. So I suppose it would document that art also. And then, personally, I plan on continuing to do bookworks and probably another zine project.
Okay, but just not a Placemag, a different.
Yeah.
Okay.
And but then, I mean, who knows?
No, that's one other thing that I always find sort of difficult is given my background, where I'd be putting up a show and then keeping it up for a month minimum, if not longer, so as to try and get everybody, as many people as possible, to see the stuff. Mm-hmm. It's not exactly ephemeral what you're doing, but it is that sort of one night only thing. And it's, to me, it always struck me as being an awful lot of work for not an awful lot of payback, because there's only so many people you can fit into a room at any one time.
Yeah.
And then it is more about the party than the art. And yeah, how do you deal with that whole sort of idea that, okay, people are showing up to support, but then they might not be able to see the art, and then
They might be coming for the beer briar beer, who knows. Charles Beerbrier has been very generous to us for the parties, and that could be the reason. They might not be coming for the magazine or the art.
But there, in terms of it, just in terms of the way that you think about exhibiting and stuff like that with this thing, with the show that's happening, the one that I can't pronounce, Colo Coloro. Yes. There it's where, again, you say it's one night thing.
Yes.
And it is, it's sort of, if you blink, you miss it.
And it becomes like a dance piece, or like any other thing that's ephemeral, that passes, that, people get to experience it at that time, and then it doesn't exist anymore. It gets dismantled, and then, you know, maybe the parts get rearranged and presented in another way later. But I don't know why we do it that way. Maybe we are making more work for ourselves.
Because I figure it's the sort of thing where you just sort of stick it up, and then, okay, so we got this up. Cool. This is great. This is fun. And okay, now we can take a deep breath. We can relax a little bit, and let's get some reaction to it, as opposed to, bam, you got to get into the next one almost immediately.
Well, I think I had a chance to do the opposite when I was running the Peace Art Gallery at the Balgo a few years ago, because at that time I was putting up shows of emerging artists for 2 weeks at a time, and they... you know, people would have a chance to come into the space, and my art was usually up in my studio in the back at the same time. So I did have a chance to have that sort of long-term exposure, but I really like doing the parties, I think, more than running an art gallery, because it is fun that it's only one night.
Yeah, there it's, I can see if, which one, if it, coming from your experience where you're saying, okay, we did that, and this is now not necessarily a reaction, but could be considered a reaction to it. What is it about the ephemeral nature, the it's way too early.
Well, one of my sort of slogans for art, I mean, I did a show last summer at the Visual Voice Art Gallery, that was called PAX, and I invented all these slogans in Latin, so it's kind of like Colo Coloro, where it's Latin words, and the slogans had to do with, well, they were sort of anti-war slogans that were pulled from the Vietnam era that I had translated into Latin and then presented on army tarps. They were permanent marker on army tarps, and I'd also done like sticker work and put stickers up in the neighborhood and posters and you know, put up like stencils and stuff in on walls outside, and that stuff sort of falls under the category of Ars Brevis Vita Longa. So what that means is art is short, life is long, and it's a I altered a famous slogan, which is Ars Longa Vita Brevis, art's long, life is short, because I think that, you know, we get really attached to the material objects as artists, and it's, you know, my tendency to want to break away from that to make it about just creating the object in the moment or presenting the idea in the moment, instead of trying to make something that's going to last forever, that's going to be in a museum for a long time, even though it's possible, but I can't guarantee that. All I know is what's happening right now.
Yeah, there, I understand that entirely, and there it is. It is really turning stuff on its head from the way that we sort of typically, or not typically, the cliche-driven way of dealing with art right now is to say, ooh, you imbue it with a whole bunch of sort of value.
Right.
And at which point you put it up on a pedestal and you say, ooh, look at this, look at this, look
cover
at this.
Cover a human skull in diamonds or something and sell it for a bunch of money.
Exactly. Yeah, and there, that's, it's one of the things that I'm sort of having to play with, or not to play with, having to deal with, and sort of like there's that whole, there's also the whole idea of sort of open source culture where it's like you just toss stuff up there for free and see what happens and so on. I find it with, yeah, the thing that I just find difficult with that whole sort of concept vis-a-vis art is, man, all those parties are extremely tiring. I'm not 18 anymore. I like getting to sleep at 10 o'clock at night some nights.
Right.
And so then there's that whole sort of like sense of missing stuff, which
well,
is just,
maybe next time I'll have a picnic in the afternoon so that you can attend.
I'm planning on making it on Friday. It's nice. The sort of thing where just because there's some, certain nights I like going to sleep at 10 o'clock doesn't mean there are other nights I don't go to sleep at 10 o'clock.
Right.
But it is that sort of just, yeah, it's you either have to be so connected or you're just so unaware, and I much prefer being aware of stuff and then having the time to deal with it on my terms as opposed to somebody else imposing their terms on it.
Oh, I see, just in terms of timing.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, there are still these physical objects that are the residue of those processes. So whether it's, you know, giant printouts of a photocopy that get shown as art at a party, they're still around. They're junking up my studio. And, you know, we also have these magazines and we can print more of them. So even if if people can't make it to the one night or the party, then they can still have a chance to see it.
Although it's seeing something else entirely.
Yeah, I guess they're missing the context a little bit.
Although it is the sort of thing where you can think about it as far as getting yourself into a museum. It's Musée des Beaux-Arts last summer recreated Andy Warhol's factory.
Right.
And so you can think maybe in 30 years the Musée des Beaux-Arts is going to recreate the Peace Gallery.
Yeah, maybe I could just sell them all my furniture. I can move.
Actually, that would be, I'd be thinking then sell it to the Musée d'Art Contemporain, have them let you use their space as your studio after buying all of it.
Okay, that's a little Richard Prince moment right there. Mm-hmm. Nice.
Okay. And so, yeah, there it's, once more to get the stuff out there. Also, if you can't make it to the show, which is on Friday, and I can't pronounce it to save my life.
Coloro.
Thank you. Thank you very much. There are also other ways of seeing stuff. There is JenniferHamilton.com for those of you who are internet savvy. It's, you should know how to spell Jennifer Hamilton. Even I can do that at this early hour of the morning. There's also placemag.com.
.org.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
It's early in the morning again. I keep complaining about that, but it's early in the morning. Anyhow, which has all copies of the magazine and so on
yeah,
it and so forth.
It's free. It's available. It's on the internet.
Uh-huh.
So if you can't get a paper copy or you can't come to a party, you can see it online.
But you still should come to the party and you still should get a paper copy.
Yes.
And the address for the show this Friday is 5555 Degaspé, which is the Mylan Guitar Shop. And one last thing, because we are running quickly up and close. It's another thing that I have to try and figure out is, because as we were mentioning off air, is there's the show at the Mylan Guitar Shop. There's mm-hmm. also Wilder and Davis, who are luthiers down on Rachel, who art stuff, and this whole sort of combination of music and art, visual art, which I find extremely interesting, and trying to figure out how and where it all fits in and stuff like that.
Well, the guys who work at the guitar shop who run it, Jeremy Clark and Mike Kennedy, they are artists also. They're excellent craftspeople, and they spend every day in the shop making these really beautiful objects that are highly valued. So I think it's a natural fit for us to sort of collaborate, especially because we're neighbors.
Yes, that always helps. Although there I'd be saying it's sort of like their yin to your yang. Or you're taking what is traditionally considered not an art thing, they are then elevating it to an art form, given mm-hmm. the guitars that they make are really, really nice looking. You're taking what is traditionally considered a high form of, oh my God, let's look at this, and bring it down to the very ephemeral, oh, this is just something in passing, and if you catch it, great.
Yeah. Well, I think it's the most natural thing in the world to try to put a mark on another surface. So whether it's pen on paper or ink on a guitar that then gets varnished and finished, I think that it's all part of emerging tradition.
Cool. At which point, thank you very, very much for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
I look forward to the show. And as I said, everybody should go see it. It's something like that.
Coloro.
Thank you very much. And it's at the Mylan Guitar Shop on Friday. It starts at 9 o'clock. It's
50. Oh, yeah. And Bob Wilcox is performing. That's the surprise special guest.
And not a surprise anymore.
No, it's out of the bag.
5555 Degaspé starts at 9 o'clock. Then if you can't make it, it's JenniferHamilton.com and/or placemag.org. And Liz?
Weather is 15 degrees Celsius, in case you're wondering. And there's some sunshine. It's 7:59 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. Thanks so much, Zeke and Jennifer Hamilton, for coming in to chat with Zeke and us and letting us know about this event. And maybe you'll let us know about future events as well. If ever you have an event, please write to us, monday@ckut.ca. We're now going to go to Democracy Now! Headlines, because it's 8 a.m. on the dot.